Hey everyone, this is Noor, and you're listening to the Radical Contemporary Podcast, the summer edition. For the gorgeous summer season, we've partnered up with the G Hotel at Seashell, located on Egypt's north coast. The G Hotel is a brand that fits seamlessly with Radical. While staying at the G, experience generous indulgence with their opulent attention to detail in art, design, music, gastronomy, and holistic living quarters that formulate the essence of the G lifestyle. It's quite simple, really. The G is where the good things are. And for that reason, we'd like to thank them for collaborating with us this summer. So here's what to expect. We'll be bringing you experts in the fields of health, wellness, art, design, music, and more, and having conversations that have the ability to change the way we see the world.
It's always mind over matter. It has always been mind over matter. And if there's one thing that I truly believe in, it is this. What I always tell people is can't, when they tell me I can't do one more rep or I can't do one more set, I tell them that can't is a state of mind. So I'm always working on that mind because the body will follow through after that.
In this episode, I speak to fitness coach Yassine Gedelhaq on his journey exploring and mastering a variety of fitness sports, including Pilates, capoeira, football, weightlifting, and boxing. We talk about recovering from injuries, overcoming substance abuse, the concept of mind over matter, securing major partnerships with brands such as Puma, Middle East, and using sports as a form of salvation. Yassine is part of LA7 Gym, currently located at the G Hotel at Seashell. And I have to say, this was one of my favorite episodes to date.
Do you have to do it every single day? Do you find time for it? Do you make time for it? Do you find the space? Sports is who I am. I can't deny that.
And now to my conversation with Coach Yassine.
This is our last episode with the G Hotel for the summer season, and I thought it would be perfect to end it with you, a coach, seeming that people are all but scrambling to get back in shape after the summer. So I think it's really like the perfect last splash, Yani. So tell me, so take me back a little bit, like where did you grow up and where did you go to school?
All right. I grew up in Qatar, Doha, during the late 80s and the 90s. I went to the French school there, Lycée Français de Doha. Then when I came to Egypt in 96, I went to LFC, Lycée Français du Caire, and stayed there for quite some time. I enjoyed myself a bit too much, so I wanted to stay a bit more in school.
Okay.
And that was it. That was the beginning of actually life in Cairo.
So you grew up, Yani, briefly outside of Cairo.
Yes.
I grew up in Jeddah. That's actually super interesting. Do you think did that impact your character at all, coming from Barra to Cairo?
Of course. If it wasn't for that mixture of me starting my life in Qatar, I don't think I would have been the person that I am today.
Okay, why so? What was specific about it? Is it kind of like the people you met?
Yes. I lived, of course, Yani, you coming from Jeddah, you know how it is living in the Gulf. Most expats live in compounds, and those compounds are restricted for basically expats. So I was exposed to different cultures and different people from different countries, and I always went back home with a lot of questions to my parents, and they used to answer those questions by telling me, we do this at home, this is how they do things at their house, we cook things that smell differently, they cook things that smell different from what we do, this is how they live, this is how we live. So I got exposed to all this, and I learned to actually accept all of that at a young age. So I think that had a major role into who I am today.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. This is something that I always think about, Lahoa. The melting pot of people, that it makes you a bit more of an... It nourishes acceptance, it nurtures acceptance, diversity, all of that. That's actually an awesome fact. Cool. So you came to Egypt. And you went to school. Where did you go to college?
I did online study. I didn't want to go to college.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I'll tell you. When I graduated from school, I was scheduled to go to France to study psychology and criminal law. Lucky for me that 3 days before I got my residency to go to France, there was 3 bomb attacks in Sinai, in Nueva.
Okay.
So they pushed all visas to further notice. And I got my visa in beginning of January 2004. Now, during that time, I started working. I worked in the entertainment business. I was working with Ganzouri back then. And it just took off. And I realized that I wanted nothing to do with criminal law and psychology. I enjoyed what I was doing. And I thought it was going to be a loss of time for me to study something that I'm not going to actually work with. So
huge like change of path for you then.
Yes. You may call it like a sabbatical year, but I was actually discovering what I wanted to do in my life. And I actually started doing different things just to know what I want to study and then reinforce it. So I worked in the entertainment business. And then I did, there was a family business of, it's a design studio. It's a marketing agency that started in Qatar and was continued here in Egypt. So I got into this as well, didn't like it. Then I got into a bit of tourism.
Okay.
And that was a bit good at the beginning. Then I didn't enjoy it that much. So I started thinking about what I wanted to do. And what made sense was to actually study marketing and management, because this is what I wanted. This is where I thought my life would be at.
Okay.
And I didn't want to go to college where I put my life on hold and actually waste all the things that I was doing during those couple of years, because I actually got it that year extended to a year and a half. And when I took the decision, I actually said, all right, you know what? I'm going to do this online and I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing. And that was basically it. Then I moved from marketing to real estate. I stayed in real estate for 5 years, five and a half years, until I actually hated real estate. And I left my job in real estate one day before the revolution.
You're kidding. Okay.
On the 24th of Jan, I left my job with no return.
Wow. That was critical.
Yep. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because during that time, I had already started to practice Pilates. Soline, actually, I love her for that. Shout out to Soline. She got me into Pilates. She was like, you know what? You should give it a try. It's really good. All the athletes are doing it and all this. I wasn't too convinced, to be honest with you, till I did my research. I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. I went. I was the only guy in class with 6 girls, and I was struggling.
we can swear. I don't know. Like, honestly.
All right. Struggling like a motherfucker in that class. I was the only guy. And the girls were going through that workout like butter. And I said, you know what? No, fuck that. I'm coming back and I'm going to get better at this. I started working out religiously, coming from like a. I've always been an athlete, bear in mind.
Yani, were you always athletic or is this something you thought you, it wasn't like a transformation or something?
No. I come from a very, very athletic background. Ever since I was a kid, I started off as, I started with gymnastics. I did swimming. I did tennis, squash, football, basketball, volleyball, track and field, boxing at a very young age as well. We'll come into why I started doing boxing in a bit.
Yeah.
So I was coming from that background where I'd hit the gym. I'm all about the six packs and, you know, bench pressing and squatting and all that. And all of a sudden I'm in a class with like 5 girls struggling to keep my legs up in tabletop to finish that set of abs. So I said, you know, no, I'm coming back. And
where was the class?
It was in Zamalek at Reform Pilates. Mila was my instructor, my mentor. And I owe a lot to her. Every single interview that I do, I have to mention Mila, because she was the reason why I got into that track, because she saw in me what I didn't know existed. She told me you would make a fantastic instructor. And she worked so hard with me to get me to do this. 6 months in me being a Pilates a client at her studio, I actually ran my first class, my first beginner's class.
Was this like regular practice, or was it kind of an exception for them? That's a very short amount of time.
It's a very short amount of time, but the amount of dedication that I put in, I was studying like there's no tomorrow. She worked with me day and night. Bear in mind, I was free. I had nothing to do. I had no job, so I had all the time in the world to actually get this done. And we worked a lot together. She worked on me like there's no tomorrow. And I was always observing how she did things, how she ran her class, and all that. And she had to travel, and she told me, you know what, I'm leaving you the studio, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. It was a huge shock for me, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because ever since that first class, I actually knew that this is what I wanted to do.
So you kind of stumbled into Pilates during a time where you were taking a hiatus, technically, but you had already been doing it, and then you dived in, you perfected this craft.
Yes.
And then you moved on to something else, capoeira, correct?
Happened with capoeira. While I was instructing Pilates, I've always played football. I was playing football and I got an injury where I popped my collarbone and I tore all the ligaments around my shoulder with my rotator cuffs. I had two surgeries, and that was one of the turning points in my life. So, I was at home for 2 months. I thought I had lost it all after everything that I had done, that I had reached with Pilates and all that. I thought that, you know, my life was over. And
can you tell us a bit about the time? Like, how did you pull yourself through it by these two surgeries and all of this rehab?
I'll tell you, it wasn't easy. It was extremely, extremely hard. Because it was more mental than physical. I was pushed mentally to actually get through this rather than physically. I stopped believing at that very first phase that actually I could get through this. And with time and a lot of time on my hands and to think, I started doing new things. While my hand, it was my right hand, and I'm right-handed. While my hand was taped to my body, I started to teach myself how to write with my left hand, because I said, if I don't ever get to use my hand again, because actually, bear in mind, the doctors told me that you will never be able to do the things that you used to do before that injury. And I said, fuck that. I went to one of the best physiotherapists in my opinion, in Egypt. Her name was Baraka. She had her own studio in Mohandisin. She was a psychiatrist and a physiotherapist. Yeah, that was look, subhanAllah, everything happens for a reason, because this is exactly what I needed. And that was the path that I needed to go through, because as I was with her, she saw something in me. I don't know why. Started to talk to me a lot on a personal level, on a deep level, tapping into old memories, figuring out why things happened, why do I act about certain stuff today, linking them to things that happened in the past. We worked very, very deep together. Mm. And she just pulled me through. And I started to realize that I had a different path ahead of me. I'd finish with her an hour and a half of rehab, and I'd go to the club, and I'd stay in the water doing work for my arm, for my shoulder, for like a good 4 or 5 hours.
Wow.
And I'd go back completely tired, wake up in the morning, do the whole thing all over again. It took me to a really, really nice place at that time. And this is when I stumbled on capoeira, because I was looking for capoeira for a very long time and I didn't know that it existed in Egypt.
What is capoeira?
Capoeira, oh my God, capoeira is life. Capoeira is a Brazilian martial art that combines dancing, kicks, gymnastics, singing. Capoeira is spiritual. Capoeira is philosophy. Capoeira is who you are. Capoeira is going back to your ancestors and discovering what they used to do, understanding who they were, what they went through, and transforming it into an art today, in a nutshell.
Nice.
So I went to my very first class in the dodgiest places of Cairo. It's actually in the, yeah, true that. It was, or still is, in Medan al-Opera, right next to Garage al-Opera, Nadi Salah, where you have to jump a fence to get into, and you walk in and everyone's just looking at you. Someone's news coming in, and everyone just says salve. Salve is actually the greeting. It's the energy that you put in. And everyone comes in, they greet you with love. They welcome you in the family directly, because Capoeira is a worldwide family. And bear in mind, during that time, I was still recovering from my injury. I could not do a plank assisted with my knees on the floor. Couldn't.
You couldn't do a single plank.
I couldn't do a plank, not a push-up. I couldn't do a plank. I couldn't hold a plank. 3 months later, I was doing handstands.
Interesting.
4 months later, I was doing what all doctors told me I could never do again in my life, which was walk on my hands. That was the very first beginning. This is what Capoeira does to you. It gets you on a high, and as you're working out, it's strengthening your body, because you're working on body weight, and half of the time, you are on your hands, not on your feet.
This was your road to recovery.
Yeah, my road to recovery, and the beginning of my road to glory.
I love that, honestly. Okay, so Capoeira, Pilates, you now have two things under your belt that you can confidently say you are adept at. You can really do well. So who mentored you through the Capoeira?
We had a Brazilian professor. His name was Pasoka. Now, that's not his real name. In Capoeira, everyone has an alias, and it becomes your identity, becomes who you are. No one calls you by your real name. And this alias is usually something that is personal, that is related to you or to things that you do. So his name was Professor Pasoka. And he again saw something and he worked with me so hard, mentored me, gave me everything that I needed to know in that phase about Capoeira before he left. And I was actually, I had the honor to be part of what we call batizado. It's like the baptism in Capoeira, where you get your rank, your cord, your belt, if you want to say, in that group. And I was actually made a level 2 capoeirista in that group. I wasn't made the level 3 capoeirista for political reasons, but it didn't upset me one bit, because I was the first level 2 capoeirista from that group to actually instruct in a different location that we had got.
So
it was beautiful.
It was an honor, honestly, for someone in that sport, correct? Like, it's something that means that you can teach it, not only practice it, right?
Yeah, because you're not allowed to actually teach or instruct unless you're the person who's in the status of your mestre, which is your master, the person that's actually instructing you. You cannot instruct without their permission, being like to instruct.
I want to know, so obviously you do believe in the power of mentors.
Of course.
So in your coaching style, like, to deviate before we get into boxing and the rest of it, how much of it is mental and how much is physical? Like, how much do you coach someone mentally to push themselves forward, and how much physically to push themselves forward? And do you gauge that based on the person, the character, the athlete that's in front of you?
It's always mind over matter. It has always been mind over matter. And if there's one thing that I truly believe in, it is this. Because when I didn't have the matter, when my body wasn't actually doing what it needed to do, it's because the mind was actually blocking it from doing what it had to do. So it's always mind over matter. If you work on that mind, and if that mind believes that it can achieve, it shall achieve. There is nothing to stop it. What I always tell people is can't, when they tell me I can't do one more rep or I can't do one more set, I tell them that can't is a state of mind. It is not real. It is only real if you live it and if you give in to it. But if you believe that you can do this, you can go for that rep, you will go for it. And that's always what I do, because when they tell me that they can't, I know, I can see it in their eyes. Everyone has a tell, whether it's their eyes, their mouth, the way they breathe, the sounds they make. Everyone has a tell that's going to show when they really, really can't do something, when they're unable to lift their hands or to run that mile or to do that push-up or whatever it is. So I'm always working on that mind, because the body will follow through after that.
I agree 100% honestly with what you said. I think it is all mental, and 100% I think, Taban, when you're working out, the reason why group classes and coaching and that human element is important is because sometimes you don't know what you're capable of. And someone else, like you said, who can look and see your tell, what your potential is, and are you actually going to give up? This makes all the difference.
Yes. Yes.
We want to get into boxing. So first of all, how did you get into boxing?
I got into boxing because when I came to Egypt and I was playing basketball, I played for a club that did not want to sell me for another club. And I wanted to go to that other club and they wouldn't let me. So for 3 years, they kept me registered as a player in that club so I don't get the chance to play for someone else. I said, fuck it. And I started boxing with my friends. And immediately, I've always loved boxing, because ever since I was a kid, my grandfather, God bless his soul, used to box as a kid. And he used to always make me watch on that old TV that he had, Ali fights, as I was a kid. And then I started growing up. I grew up in the era of Mike Tyson coming up. And Mike Tyson being the world heavyweight champion of the world. And he was a beast. And I loved everything about Tyson. And then a bit after that, there was one of my favorite lightweights in the world, featherweights in the world. His name was Prince Nassim Hamid. He was an English Yemeni champion. And as I used to box, I used to mimic how they used to play. And that was one thing that my coach hated back then, because I'd always play with my arms down, with my hands down. And you always have to keep your guard up. But I moved, I tried to move like they did, and I actually did well with boxing as a kid. And I've been boxing since I was 14 years old.
So boxing has always been there?
Always been there.
The thing that interested me actually when I did a bit of research on your work is that you chose to kind of deviate boxing and involve women in boxing.
Yes.
Which is something that up until a few years back, Hatta in Egypt, was quite like a different thing, you know what I mean? There was a whole athletic and sports revolution where that started coming up, and then women started getting involved in, let's call them, unconventional sports for a female in the culture, not in general, Taban. Why did you think that this was something that you wanted to introduce to women specifically?
I'm always keeping it real, right? So here goes. I love boxing. I know what boxing does. And I wanted this movement to happen for women for a lot of reasons. Reason number one, when I look around me at my friends back then, that was like 8 years ago, fitness wasn't big for women at all in Egypt. Like this whole trend, amazing trend that took place 4 or 5 years ago, wasn't as big when I first started doing boxing. Now, what I wanted to do was I wanted women to get into something that they would enjoy. And I know very well that they're going to enjoy beating the shit out of something that doesn't hit you back. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Yes.
Your situation where you get to let out all your anger, all your frustration. Your boyfriend's been bugging you. Work is doing shit. Your parents are on your ass. Your friends are acting up on you. You are this big built-up bowl of negative energy. And you don't like working out. So you keep piling things up and piling things up and piling things up until it explodes. I wanted to be that person that you explode on. And when you box, you get to do things that are socially accepted inside the workout that you can't do outside.
Yeah.
You can't go ballistic, punching a sandbag, yelling and letting out your anger. If you're walking down the street, people are going to look at you and say that you're crazy. But when you're actually working out, you can do this. And it's socially accepted. So I wanted women to fall in love with boxing, because when it comes to strength and conditioning, it's amazing. When it comes to coordination, it is the best thing that you can ever do in your life. It enhances your hand and eye coordination, your physical coordination. You get stronger by the punch. You get fitter. And at the same time, you're releasing energy. So once you get someone hooked on something, you can actually start taking that further down into different planes, which is start getting them into nutrition and then start getting them to doing a bit of weights and this and that. So you could have something that is complete at the end of the day.
Honestly, boxing, the way you put it, that it's, you know, releasing that frustration in a way that is socially acceptable, that is super interesting. And it's a confidence thing as well. I think it's a boost.
Of course.
But I think it's very important, actually, Yeni, to introduce women to sports like that are more than just the toning, that are actually kind of a 360 experience.
We're taking a break from the conversation to tell you a little bit more about the G Hotel. What we love about the G is that their lifestyle concept is rooted in supporting young musicians, artists, creatives, and pioneers. The G hosts some of Egypt's most creative minds and innovative spirits. For more information on bookings, cuisine, performances, and activities going on at the G this summer, such as meditation workshops and possibly a live recording of our very own podcast, visit www.thegseashell.com or at the G Seashell on Instagram. And now back to my conversation with Coach Yasin.
So I want to know on a much deeper level, Yani, how much has playing all of these sports really impacted your life? Yani, how important is it for Yasin to work out? Not as a coach, but as you, as a person. Yani, what importance does the workout take in your day? Is it something that has to get done? Do you do it because it's part of your daily routine, or because you know that this is something that pushes you forward?
All right. Get ready for this. As I told you, I've always been into fitness. I've always been a fitness freak ever since I was a kid. I loved sports. I did every single sport. And whenever I do something, I do it till I get the job done. I always give them 120%. Now, at the age of 14, I started enjoying, started as trying it out first, and then started enjoying a bit more what we call illegal substance. Now, I was in the field. I used to drink. I used to do drugs. And I loved doing both. And that's a very dangerous combination when you have the places to go to every single day and everything is up for grabs in front of you. Mm. I did this from the age of 14 till the age of 25.
Okay.
Now, here was the turning point. At the age of 25, my father passed away. And when my father passed away, bear in mind that prior to that, I had a bit of history when it came to drinking and drugs. I had 3 ulcers in my stomach. And at the age of 19, I had a liver infection from alcohol. So, but I always had sports in my life. Sports was always there.
Okay.
And at the age of 20, my father passed away, I wanted to sober up and I wanted to actually understand what my purpose was and to realize what was I doing. So I had a few questions to ask myself. And one of them was, did any of the things that you do make your life better? And my answer was no. So I decided to quit drinking and to quit doing drugs. And I buried myself into sports. So sports was my getaway, but it was my savior. Sports was everything for me. It's when you tell me, do you have to do it every single day? Do you find time for it? Do you make time for it? Do you find the space? Sports is who I am. I can't deny that. And I can't deny the fact that it has always been there for me, that I let it go today. So I really can't let it go unless I'm unable to physically. I'm on a wheelchair. And if I am on a wheelchair, I'll find something else to do that is sports related. So, I mean, they got Olympics, Paralympics, right? So
yeah.
if everything fails, you still have somewhere else to succeed. So in closure, sports is just who I am. It's what I know.
You say that this is not your job. It's just you being in your element. And
yep.
That entire story is kind of like, so it was always there, but you used it as a tool as well to kind of get into sobriety and move out of this darker space. And it worked for you in that sense.
Yes. Yes.
And before that, it wasn't who you were. It was just an element of your life.
It has always been a part of me, yeah. But I hadn't realized how important it was and how much space it occupied and would occupy down the line as well. Mm-hmm. Like even when I'd go on for a few days partying, I'd always find time to work out. I'd hit the gym, I'd go play football, I'd box, I'd do anything because it's what I do every single day. One of the biggest frustrations that I had when I had my injury is that I was literally sitting at home because I couldn't do anything else. And yeah. Even then, I started working out, trying to do things without using my hands.
So this is honestly, Yanni, the definition of perseverance. And from that, I want to ask you, a lot of people who start working out, they always want to know where to get the motivation from. And if you don't have it in your DNA like you do, if you're not someone who typically does work out, where can you get motivated?
All right. I don't believe that you don't have this in you. Because again, as we said, can't is a state of mind. So if your mind doesn't see it, it's not going to happen. I don't believe in watching a motivational video and then saying, oh yeah, you know what, I'm going to go work out. No, fuck all that. If you don't do this for yourself, if you don't do this because you want to, it's not going to happen. I had this guy the other day stop me. I was grabbing a coffee from Starbucks. And then he comes up to me and is like, oh, you know what? I want to work out, but I don't know what to do. I was like, no, you don't want to work out. He said, no, I want. I said, no, you don't want to work out. You don't want to work out as much as you need to. You just kind of want it. And if you kind of want something, it's not going to happen. Why would the world, why would God, why would the universe come to terms if you're not ready to give your 120%? So if you want to find motivation, you are your own motivation. We don't need anyone around us. We really don't. Because at the end of the day, it's you doing that work. Back when I was saying that boxing is life and I love boxing, I believe in boxing, it's because when you are a boxer, what you do is you have a whole team that is working with you to make you the best. But no one does the work for you. When you're in that ring and you're fighting, this is life. This is exactly what life does to you. Your life is going to bring shit towards you all the time. If you're not prepared for it, that's where your team comes in with the preparation. If you don't put in the work, life's going to eat you. And that's all on you. I can't blame someone else for my failure. I'm a failure because I want to fail, because I've allowed myself to fail. So for those who actually tell me, whenever anyone, and true story, anyone that texts me on Instagram or calls me or any of my friends that tell me I need motivation, I tell them basically go fuck yourself, because if you don't get that motivation on your own, no one's going to do it for you.
Yes.
We need to stop relying on people around us. We have all of the power inside of us. We just don't want to believe it.
100,000,000%, honestly. I'm a big believer in that. I really think that it's all about you. You have everything you need within you, and you push through, and nobody can get you to get up and work out. Nobody can get you to push through a workout, it's all about yourself. And then that's why boxing, actually, one of my friends, he's a boxer, he always says this. He's like, boxing is like a mirror of life, because it's you and other person in the ring, and you just, there's no assistance.
He knows what's up.
Yes, apparently. So I want to get into social media, actually. All right. Because you have a very cool and active account. It's really, it's prominent, it's motivational, but at the same time, it's not like your typical fitness, like 24/7 in your face account. It's a lot of character in there, and I really like that. So how has social media helped you build your brand? Was it a conscious thing? Or did you just kind of like start posting about what you do on the day to day, and it started growing?
I really never gave social media the effort that I was supposed to give, and I'm completely okay with that, because I enjoy watching social media. If you look at my account, you can find me not posting for 2 weeks, three weeks. The reason why is because during that time, I don't think or see that something is actually happening that is worth posting. Whenever I post something, I try to keep my profile as real as it gets, and that describes who I am. Because I had said this once before, when I get asked, who is Coach Yassine? Yassine is the father, Yassine is the husband, Yassine is the athlete, Yassine is the coach, Yassine is the teacher, Yassine is the kid, Yassine is the motivator, Yassine is a lot of things all mixed up together. And this is what I want to give, or what I want to show people that actually enjoy looking at my account, because it's not going to be your 24/7, just like you said, your 24/7 fitness content or lifestyle. Or it's everything. It's I share what I want to share with people, and a lot of times I feel like not sharing anything, and I do exactly that.
And that's fine. Like it's natural. It's not kind of like a strategy in a way at all.
I don't find myself obliged to actually post. Yeah. I really don't owe it to anyone. And when I do this, I actually do it for me and do it for the people that are going to enjoy what I do for me. Of course, there's always that, you know what, we want to send you something and we want you to post something for it. I only post things, even this, when I do work with anyone, I only post things that I use, that I trust, or that I know. Yeah. I never take, even when there's a lot of money involved in it, I don't do it. I'm not going to sell a bullshit product just because I'm getting paid for it.
You understand that you do have influence, you have voice as a coach, as someone who people do trust. Brands are powerful. Like brands on social media like yours, they have influence.
Yes. I'll tell you one thing. I don't know if you know about this. I was a teacher in school for 7 years. And
no, I don't.
Coach was a teacher. When I taught, I have a lot of my students that are following me, and I had to really pay attention to the things that they're going to be exposed to. And that was one of the things that always kept me on my toes, saying, all right, you know what? My students know how real I am and how I always keep it real with them. What would they say, or what would they do if they saw this? Would they follow into this footstep or not? Bear in mind that all of the students, what we've just discussed right now, every single detail they know, because I spoke to them about this.
Amazing.
Every single thing they know, for them to actually know what life is all about, and what life is going to throw at you, and to just be prepared. Keep your guard up.
Yeah. No, I think that that's actually fair. And keeping that in mind is awesome, because it's understanding that you built a brand for a reason and you have this platform for a reason, and then you use it in a way that naturally makes sense to you. But I want to talk about the positive side of social media in the sense of brand collaborations. I know that you represent and you're an ambassador for Puma.
They're my peeps.
They're amazing. Shout out to Puma Middle East and shout out to Thais, because we have to shout her out. Thais.
I'll tell you one thing before your question. Let me tell you, because I'm sure Thais is going to listen to this. Thais did something that no brand in the world did. She made people connect and fall in love with each other in 3 days. When we went to Puma on that trip, none of the people that were on that trip knew each other, except for maybe two or three that lived in the same country. So basically what they did was this. They wanted to gather a few of the coaches from the Middle East, different countries, to get to know each other, to work with each other, to get a taste of what coaches do back home, and to actually connect.
Where was this? So
that was in Amman last year.
And how was that experience with Puma? Like,
oh my God.
Overall.
It was amazing. From the minute that she sent me that email saying that she wanted me on board, I was extremely excited. And then 2 days before the trip, I was extremely hesitant. I was like, you know what? I'm not feeling it. I don't know if it's a good idea. You have the people going and all that. And you know what? I don't know. I don't feel like going. And I felt very off. I get on that plane, I land, and the first people that we meet were the people from Kuwait, the coaches from Kuwait, and then the coaches from Dubai. And the coaches from Saudi had already landed and were at the hotel. So we got to know each other, you know, getting to know each other and all that stuff. We go to the hotel, and this is when the magic started. Instantly, the vibes were amazing. The people were just beautiful, down to every single second. When we left 3 days later, we were literally crying. We were in tears. We didn't want this to end. No one understood how powerful that trip was. And automatically, this was linked to Puma, because Puma made this happen.
And this is actually insane, because she spoke to me specifically. This is a brand that somehow has hacked the whole influencer situation. Yes. And made it authentic. Like, what you're saying now is from the heart. And it's kind of like a brand that doesn't have quote unquote ambassadors even. You're someone who just reps.
Exactly.
And for real you do. And that's really, really sick. And kind of a talent in a sense for brands to find people that fit in that way.
If I had planned for this to happen, I don't think it would have happened.
For sure.
And it just, they made this happen. And you know what the beauty was coming back from that trip? We came back from that trip, and I personally, when I would wear any other brand, I'd feel guilty.
That's so insane.
No one ever did this. I'll tell you what, I was the first Everlast brand ambassador in Egypt. And Everlast was a huge milestone for me, because, you know, I'm a boxer, I love boxing, and Everlast is like, you know.
Yes, it's huge.
But I never felt that. I never felt that when I would wear any other brand, I wouldn't be okay about it. And
loyalty, it's like a kind of a real bond that was created with the brand.
Exactly it. They did this without anyone knowing, and I don't even think that this was even their intention. I mean, they wanted to do something good for people, and that was the impact that they had on for 3 days.
I love that. I think that's actually fascinating. And I think that it's a great example of proper marketing, but also proper culture, like proper brand culture building. So that's an amazing brand that you're affiliated with as an example. Another one is LA7, the gym. I love this gym, to be honest. Me as Noor personally, I work out there in Guna. I work out there at the G Hotel. I think it's one of the best gyms in Egypt. It's super, super well equipped. The coaches are amazing. So how does it feel to be part of like kind of like an ecosystem like that? And how important is it for you to really be in the gym, like lift weights and the old school system? You know what I mean?
All right. Me being in LA 7, again, was out of me falling in love with the gym. When they first opened, I wasn't with them. I was still in school and I was doing my own thing after school. And Ghazali put me on board with him. And during that time, I was in a place where I wanted nothing else but what I was doing. And I I didn't even open the door to any other opportunity. I didn't want to hear him out. I didn't want to know what he wanted to say. And he got extremely offended. He thought that I was being cocky, not wanting to know what his offer was. But from my side, and that's what I explained to him after that, and he believed that. I was in a place where I didn't want to do anything else. I was very happy doing what I was doing.
Teaching, right, at the time?
I was teaching and I was coaching after afternoon, but actually I wasn't coaching a lot. I'd only have 5 clients and that's it. I'd close myself to 5 clients that I'm actually working and building stuff with, and that was it. Okay. And by pure coincidence, 2 years after he had opened, 2 summers ago, we got together talking business, and I started loving everything about his work ethics, his vision, the amount of blood, sweat, and tears that he put into this brand. And when you say that there is no other gym like that in Egypt, it's not us bragging, but you don't find that type of hustle and grind on that level. It's not out there. And I'm not talking about the entities. I'm talking about the gym, the proper old school gym mixed up with everything else. And the trainers there, they make you feel like you're at home. It's a family. It's not a place that you go to. When you go to LA7.
Like the energy at LA7 is insane. Working out there, even by like at the G Hotel, for example, the gym is sick, the outdoor, the indoor, the energy, you walk in, you can tell people, it's just like everyone is so professional, and it's a different kind of vibe at that gym. So
yeah.
So tell me about weightlifting. Like some people see this as like more of yani in madrasa al-adima, like how to get fit, you know, the old school, like hardcore. And how important is it for you and your system and in general, yani?
Now, throughout all the sports that I did in my life and the sports that I actually taught in the industry, what I like to go for is getting everything together. So I like to incorporate with weightlifting. Weightlifting is my base. I do strength training all the time. I've been lifting weights since I was a kid. Weightlifting has always been a part of who I am, because when you want to look in a specific way, you go to weightlifting, because you get to work out on every single muscle. You isolate those muscles. You work in different patterns, in different groups of training, till you get to sculpt down how you want to look. So this is weightlifting. Because if you do body weight training, for example, you are going to get stronger. You are going to get fitter. But you're going to reach a certain plateau where you stop growing, because you're only using your body weight. You don't grow in size. Now, with weightlifting, it makes you grow and it makes you shrink based on the food that you eat. So nutrition is always number one. The last thing you do in life is work out. It's the last thing you do. If you want to grow in size or go down in size, it's all about food. Some workouts are based on strictly cardio. Some workouts are based on fat burning and muscle building. Some workouts are based on a lot of muscle building and a bit of fat burning. So it's a variation of different things that you look for. But weight training, in my opinion, is essential. I always incorporate it with my clients. When I do privates, I always incorporate weightlifting. It's the base. As old school as it is, it has shown to the world that it actually works. It's real.
Yeah. I'm very curious about one thing. So we've spoken about a lot of different things. We've spoken about Pilates, capoeira. We've spoken about boxing and weightlifting. As Coach Yassine, like, what made you kind of make sure to have all of these different sports under your belt? Like, was it a conscious decision, or like, I mean, did you kind of just, you went through them naturally, as you said to me before, but did you ever think like, let me stop and focus on just one of them? Or as a coach, is it important to you to have all of these, this kind of like toolkit of all of these different sports and the knowledge behind them?
It's a bit of everything, but again, it always happened unexpectedly. Now, I'm a bit of an obsessive guy. When I get into something, I give it everything, and I mean everything. When I got into Pilates, I actually dropped going to the gym, and I was only doing Pilates, and I play football a lot. My body started to change. The way it looked started to change because I wasn't giving it the stress that it needed to actually maintain or to grow into what I wanted in mind. So when I was doing Pilates, I was extremely strong. When I'd grab something, I'd feel that strength in my hands. When I'm doing abs, when I'm leading a class and I'm going through the whole class with them, you don't get tired after a certain point. And you always need something more to challenge you more and more and more. And you look at yourself at the mirror and then you tell yourself, all right, you know what? I don't want to only look like this. So I want to add something else to it. And then I'd get into something else. After Pilates, I got into capoeira. And it got me looking differently. But again, I wasn't satisfied. So I went back to boxing. But I would always keep in mind the principles of Pilates, the basis of Pilates. The fitness and the endurance of capoeira helped me a lot going back into boxing. The explosiveness from football added to how I would use every single sport that I do. Until I went to Guna, I lived in Guna for a bit over a year. I had no one to teach me. I had no instructors. So I only relied on me teaching the classes that I taught when I was there. I taught capoeira, I taught boxing, and I did personal training. But me as Yassine, no one was instructing me. So I was only left with the gym. So I got into the gym again after a long break, and I started loving how I developed and how I started looking. So from there, I said, I want to incorporate everything in my training. So I like to do strength and conditioning with body weight or weights. I like to do weights, and I like to use boxing as my cardio. I hate running. I think running is completely pointless. So I never run. Yeah, I run. It's either I'm running for something or from something, but just...
That's awesome. Yeah.
I swear, I just don't get it. You know, I don't, I ran 20K today. Why the fuck would I run for 20 kilometers? I'd get bored driving for 20 kilometers, let alone run. But I don't get that high. I mean, I tried it before. I don't get that high from running. It just doesn't do it for me. So I'd rather get it from somewhere. So my cardio, I use boxing, sandbag for cardio. That works as well as strength and conditioning because you're actually putting in the work with your body, weights, and circuit training. So I always incorporate everything because I think that we were designed to actually do a lot of things. So just restricting it to just one thing is not ideal for me.
Right. And so it's kind of like a 360 sort of situation where it comes full circle.
Yes. Actually, it works for my clients as well. Alhamdulillah.
And you apply it for your clients. I love that. That's sick. Okay, so I think we're coming to the end of our conversation, unfortunately, because I've been enjoying this, honestly.
Every minute of this.
Okay, so I always like to ask my guests a final question, which is, what's next for Yasin?
I have no clue. I have no clue. And that's the beauty about it. When I would get asked, back when I used to do interviews for work, and they'd ask me, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I tell them, I have no clue, but I know it's not going to be here. That used to be a shock for them. But for me, it made sense. Because if I'm in the same place for 5 years or 10 years, what am I giving?
Right.
So what's next for me? I absolutely have no clue. And that's the beauty about it. I just don't know. I'm focused about today, where I am today. I know it's going to be somewhere good, alhamdulillah, because this is how the past 11 years, from that turning point, actually 12 years, I had no clue where I was going to end up or where I was going until I was actually in it and realized where I was.
Thank you. I think that was, I think that's a great answer, honestly.
Thank you.
I have no clue. I love it. Like, honestly, yes. I'm very much about presence, honestly. Like, I feel like every day is what it is and you do it, but that's it.
People don't get the true sense of carpe diem because...
yeah.
This is it. Carpe diem is now. It's today. It's not even happened in 5 minutes. I had no clue you were going to ask me that question. Yet my answer was just ready.
Thank you for listening. And don't forget to subscribe, give us a review, shoot me a text, or direct message us on Instagram at Radical Contemporary, where we'd love to hear your feedback and the topics you'd like to listen to. Also, you can check out our website, www.radicalcontemporary.com, where all of our content is available. Finally, we'll be hosting a new guest every week, so stay tuned.